Welcome to Mental Health in Minnesota. This podcast episode is dedicated to highlighting NAMI Minnesota's support group facilitators who are passionate about transforming the narrative around seeking help and support. In a world that often shames vulnerability, our project aims to break down those barriers and change public attitudes by shedding light on the incredible work of support group facilitators. Join us as we discuss the ways in which support group facilitators dispel fears and shame surrounding joining support groups and showcasing the power of community, empathy, and understanding. Through shared experiences and heartfelt conversations, we hope to inspire a new wave of openness and acceptance, making it clear that asking for help is not a sign of weakness, but a courageous step towards healing. Let's come together, learn from one another, and make a positive impact on the way society views the strength found in seeking support. In this episode, several NAMI Minnesota support group facilitators are joining us to share their journeys as facilitators in a confidential affinity space. We hope you enjoy it.
Okay, hello. My name is Monica Jones, and I am a peer support facilitator with NAMI Minnesota, and I am here with two of my colleagues. I'll have them introduce themselves.
My name is Tanisha McShann. I facilitate a BIPOC support connection support group on Hey Peers for NAMI Minnesota, and I also am a facilitator for an in-person group. If you are looking for me online, my name is T-Mac.
Hi everybody, my name is Sayambe. I use they, them pronouns. I am one of the co-facilitators for the NAMI Minnesota's Asian support group that is held completely online over Hey Peers.
So we're going to just jump on in. Thank you guys for being here today and helping to discuss this topic of trying to increase our reach on support groups. So I thought maybe having us come and share what that experience looks like, it would help people feel more comfortable with joining us. Can you tell me what is the format and features of a support group and what can first-time attendees expect?
So we start with a check-in usually. Well, first we go through the principles of support and our guidelines, group guidelines. And then we go into check-ins. We usually limit the time based on the number of participants of that day. And then we move on to our discussion section, which is the biggest chunk of our time, where we discuss whatever the people wanted to bring to the group based on their check-ins. And then we provide support based on what kind of support the participants wanted. And then we move on to the checkout part, which is our last section. We want to kind of keep it as ending on a positive note. So we usually share what we're looking forward to or excited about in the next couple of weeks before we meet again.
Awesome. And Tanisha,
yes.
Did you want to add something? And I have a second part to the question.
Yeah, in my support groups that I co-facilitate, we do similar. And let's see, the in-person one is pretty similar format. The only difference is we have handouts that each of the participants can see, and they have a copy of the group guidelines and principles of support, but very similar to the online group meetings. And I also do, for the closing, some kind of ending on a positive note. Usually it's some kind of sharing a self-care, something that you're going to do for yourself or something that made you smile.
So the second part of the question is, why do you think it matters that support groups are peer-led?
I think it matters because in a lot of arenas, for example, if you're going to see a therapist, you're not on equal footing. And as a peer, I am equal with the other participants in the group. I am not any better or worse. I mean, we're all kind of going through similar things. So I'm just there to facilitate, to kind of make sure that things are moving smoothly to make sure that everybody is comfortable, feels supported, that type of thing. What I've noticed in the groups that I've been in is that there is a higher comfort level in being vulnerable when it is a peer-led group versus if it's led by a therapist or somebody that's not on equal footing. And I've heard participants voice that even if they might be doing therapy, they don't feel comfortable being vulnerable, but they feel a lot more comfortable being vulnerable in a peer-led support group.
I second everything that has been said. I think it's also important because we're specifically looking at peer-led support groups that are led by people who also have very personal or close experience with mental illness as well. So everyone knows that we are all going through the same things and we're not here to judge anybody. And like, there's nobody who has authority over the other people. So I think that helps with vulnerability and sharing. I also think that it has an aspect of community building because there's no authoritative figure. I think a lot of, at least I can speak for my Asian community, is we have a hard time finding similar people who are going through mental illness issues or who are able to share as much as they would want to share as well. So I think that is a really important aspect to our groups.
Thank you. So you kind of touched on this, but what experiences or processes brought you to becoming a NAMI Minnesota Support Group Facilitator?
I first got introduced to NAMI Minnesota actually by being an interviewee for a podcast in 2019. I moved on to participating to the Multicultural Young Adult Advisory Board, shout out to them, for around 3 years. And during my time there, I learned that NAMI Minnesota has a different resource that is for peer-led support groups. And I didn't see a lot of groups that are specifically designated for BIPOC people, especially Asian community, which is my community. So that's why I wanted to be a peer facilitator.
In my case, a long time ago, before NAMI had online support groups, I had a little bit of experience with a support group because my son was experiencing some mental health issues. But then 2020 hit, and I feel like the whole world, we went through a trauma together with the pandemic. And in my family, we experienced several traumatic events that severely impacted our family structure. And I sought support for both myself and the other members of my family. I found that it was extremely difficult to find support, therapists, et cetera, that were people who looked like me, being a member of the African American community. And I think this is probably true for other people, but I'm going to just speak for myself. I felt that it would be very difficult for me to open up as much as I needed to in order to talk about the issues that I was going through. And for me, I was able to access resources. It was very difficult, and I had to be very persistent. And I realized as I went along in my healing journey that the stuff that I went through, other people were going through the same things. And I realized this when I found online, I think NAMI support groups then were online, and I found them and some other support groups. And I was in community with other people in my community, also the BIPOC community in general, and found that there was a great need for other people in the BIPOC community to kind of step forward and maybe help fill some of the gaps. And I felt that I was at a point in my healing journey where that was something that I could do. I thought about becoming a therapist or something like that, but you know, I didn't want to go back to school and spend all that money for that. So I found peer support. I'm actually trained as a certified peer support specialist. And actually, I think for myself, that's a better fit for me because I'm able to share my experiences as a peer and help and walk alongside other people in their healing journey.
That's amazing. That's kind of why I kind of joined as a facilitator as well. I did see a lot of my friends struggling through the COVID-19, and they just wasn't ready to make that step to therapy. So the peer-to-peer was an amazing start. So now we're going to talk about challenges. What unique challenges have you encountered as a BIPOC support group facilitator? And how have you navigated them to ensure a safe and inclusive space for all participants?
What I've found is that some participants have come to the group and they've been kind of traumatized by other groups because they didn't feel comfortable sharing their experiences because they felt that they would be kind of mistook for something different or there'd be an overreaction. Another thing that I've found is that I can't speak for the whole BIPOC community, but at least I know for the African American community, there's a lot of healing that's done in community versus individualistic healing. And some of the other support groups kind of focus more on that. And it's been a beautiful thing to be able to be in community with other people, even in my BIPOC in my BIPOC support group, there are people that are not just the African American community, but other members of the BIPOC community. One time I had a person come in and they were very uncomfortable. They spoke primarily Spanish and English was their second language. And they were apologizing and saying, "Oh, I'm sorry, I don't have very good English." So I spoke to him in Spanish because I also have a working knowledge of Spanish. And I let him know that it was going to be okay, that he was going to be supported. And he smiled, and I believe that he felt like he was in community and felt more comfortable being in the group.
I can speak specifically for my Asian community. I noticed that in my group, there is a hesitancy to come and share their experiences, especially if they're negative or related to mental health. I think in a lot of minoritized communities, especially in the Asian community, we are told that we should not share negative things outside of our families. It brings disgrace to the family. It shows weaknesses, and that's not okay. So a lot of people don't feel comfortable sharing with our own communities their struggles. And especially in Minnesota and in a lot of other regions as well, our communities are very tight. So if we share with certain people, it might get out to the entire community. And I think that hinders a lot of folks in my community to share their experiences really candidly. So in my group, a lot of people are actually not from Minnesota, which I think is a good thing that we are online and we are accessible to anybody who are located anywhere. And I have heard people specifically say, like, I am joining this group because I know I'm not going to meet anybody that I know in real life here because I'm located in a different state. And I also see that a lot of our participants are hesitant to put their video on, even though me and my co-facilitator, we mostly have our video on like 99% of our sessions, but we don't force any of our participants to also put their video on, whether that is for comfortability reasons or privacy reasons, if it helps them feel more comfortable to share, because it kind of shows more anonymity, then we welcome any form of comfort building in their own way to participate in our own groups.
And if I could add, the group that I facilitate online, the BIPOC support group, there are also people from all over the country, and I've had people from other parts of the world actually attend the group meetings, and I think it's a wonderful thing to have online so that we have a greater outreach. And I think there's probably similar situations where people feel more comfortable that they're not going to meet in an everyday life somebody that's in the support group that may know about some of the struggles that they've disclosed during the group. So I hope that we continue to have those spaces where people feel comfortable, even if they're not Minnesota residents, but for anybody from any part of the world that would like to attend.
So I'm just going to ask, as far as challenges, when you guys first started, were there any challenges with participants, or what were some other challenges that you might have came across?
I think at the beginning, we had a lot of hard time with the number of participants. We didn't get a lot of participants our first couple of months, maybe one or two, maybe zero. And my co-facilitator and I, we were talking about our characteristics of the Asian community and why that might be. And that's the things that I shared previously. I think consistency helped. And I think sharing like our resources to other organizations also helped. Like I go to therapy in person, and in the therapy office, there's like the BIPOC support group NAMI pamphlet. So I think those kinds of things has been helping, and other resources as well. Another hardship that I find is because my group is specifically designed around the Asian identity, there are conversations that are uncomfortable because race and our identities are something that are so ingrained in our everyday lives. I think at first I was I didn't really know how to have those conversations. I have them all the time in my personal life, and I've been involved in the DEIC space a lot. But when it came to the support group environment, I didn't want to make anybody feel unwelcome when they're sharing something. So it took a lot for me to learn how to bring people into those conversations and share different perspectives while making sure that they are held accountable and know that some of the things that they say are not okay. So yeah, those are, I think, specific struggles for my group.
That was a very good answer, and I have to follow that now. I think for what I've seen in the BIPOC groups, I'll just start with one of my struggles. One of my struggles was, I still attend some other support groups, and I was very nervous about being on camera. I was nervous about whether or not I could even be a facilitator, because, you have to have your camera on. And I was nervous about, what can I even bring to the table? I don't know anything. And what if somebody doesn't like me? What I realized is that I just needed to show up as myself, as who I am. And the people that clicked with me, those would be the people that would show up at my support groups. And if they didn't, there were other support groups that were available, and that's okay. So I had to kind of get over that difficulty, had to get over the difficulty of being on camera. As far as the participants in the group, I think they just have, sometimes people come and they just want to listen because they need kind of to have that space to kind of digest the group and fill it out. And I've seen where people said, oh yeah, I'm just going to listen. But then they end up participating because they start to feel comfortable. So I think some of the main barriers are just me getting over myself as a facilitator and just showing up as myself. And also the participants just kind of not feeling like they have to jump in, but to kind of feel things out, and if it's comfortable, when it's comfortable for them to start participating in the meeting as they feel they need to.
I'm going to jump back to the first question. We talked about formats. how easy is it for someone to join? Because I think that's also, people get kind of scared about technology and learning how to download things. But with peer-to-peer, is it just a click, a link, or like?
So now that the meetings are set up online on Hey Peers, I think it's a lot easier to find the groups to begin with, because you could search NAMI Minnesota and all the NAMI groups will come up. And if you see a meeting that you want to participate in, all you have to do is click on join, or I can't remember if it's register, and it'll sign you up for that meeting. And if you want, it'll send you reminders. And then when it's time to join the meeting, then you just click on the link to join. So it's set up really nicely. It makes it really easy for people to sign up and join a meeting. And usually if somebody has technology issues, one of the facilitators or maybe even some of the other group members a lot of times are able to help them navigate through those difficulties.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. I thought that that would be important for our new attendees who are seeking to join us. So Tanisha, you kind of touched on this a little bit. You kind of shared an experience from one of your participants, but can you guys share, like, anonymously, you don't have to give anybody's name, but a scenario or an anecdote of that illustrates, like, the impact these groups have had on participants?
I think I'm very thankful for my group participants, because when we do our checkouts, a lot of people share that they're really appreciative of the space that we create. And we also have a lot of returning participants, like, every time. So I think that means a lot for me. And most of the comments that we get are them sharing that there is maybe one handful of support groups that are specifically dedicated for the Asian community. And people have been waiting, they've been looking to find those spaces, and they're really thankful that we have one. And sometimes they acknowledge that our participation level is not the highest compared to other, like, groups that are centered for different identities, but they also ask us to keep it going, like, even if they're not able to make it every single time, even if we don't have the highest number of participants, they want us to keep creating this space because they really, really want it, and it means a lot for them. I see a lot of loneliness in my community when it comes to talking about mental health, and I think our group provides a space for them to freely talk and connect with other people on the topic that is really important for them.
From my perspective, I've been in groups where, actually, I recently had a group that I wasn't just co-facilitating, I was facilitating by myself. And there was a participant that was having a really difficult time. And I am a relatively new facilitator, so I was a little nervous about how to handle the situation. But I didn't have to handle it on my own. The other people in the meeting, they stepped up and they held space for the person. We even stayed a little after the meeting in time. I didn't ask anybody to. I said that if you have to leave, go ahead and leave. But a lot of people stayed and supported this person and made sure that they were going to be okay to move on with their day after the meeting ended. And whenever things like that happen in group, it's just a beautiful thing to see how everybody is in community together and supporting other people, even if they are also going through a difficult time.
Now, what advice would you guys give to other BIPOC individuals who are interested in becoming a support group facilitator based on your journey and the lessons that you've learned?
I would say just do it. I would be glad to be a mentor for anybody that's considering it but is feeling a little nervous about it. I've had my own mentors that have encouraged me in my journey to become a peer support specialist and also a facilitator. And sometimes you just need that extra little bit of encouragement. But like I said earlier, you just need to show up as yourself. That is what people are looking for. They are looking for somebody, not somebody with some degree or whatever. They're looking for somebody that's boots on the ground, that can walk with them in their journey as they walk towards their healing.
I would say it could be hard, but it's totally worth it. There are going to be situations where, like I said, you're going to have uncomfortable conversations or not so great situations that arise because people are not going through, people are going through a really hard time and you have to show up. And sometimes you might have a hard time listening to people's like struggles because it hits you really strongly, or you're not, you don't have the capacity to support other people. But like we've shared in this entire podcast, it's a community. It's not just you. You have your co-facilitator and your other group members that will show up for each other. And it's the amount of gratitude that I feel by being in that space. Even though I'm the facilitator, I feel like I'm also there to learn and listen to other people and get energy from other people, like positive energy, to keep on going. And this shows that I made the right choice to become a peer facilitator to support my own community and give back in ways that I can based on my personal experiences.
Could I add one more thing? I forgot to mention that one of the things, maybe a little selfish reason for being a facilitator, is it's also part of my healing. By hearing other people talk about their struggles, sometimes it hits on something that I've been struggling with, and it shows me that I need to work a little bit more on that specific thing. Because I'm also, I mean, I might be a facilitator, but I'm also still on my journey, on my healing journey, trying to heal from different past traumas or current things that I may be going through. So that's another side benefit of being a facilitator, is it helps you in your healing process. It's kind of like, you know, if you teach somebody how to do something, you become a better, you learn that material even better. It's kind of a similar thing as a facilitator.
All right, so one more time for the audience. What days and times are your groups, and how can they, where do they find out where your groups are at?
The wonderful, wonderful, welcoming Asian support group. We meet every first and third Sundays, 3:30 to 5 p.m. Central Time, and we are completely online on Hey Peers.
The BIPOC community that I co-facilitate online is the NAMI Connections, NAMI Minnesota Connections support group for the BIPOC community, and it is on every other Saturdays from 10 to 11:30. And I also facilitate another support group that's not specifically BIPOC community, and it's an in-person one that's in Eagan, Minnesota on Thursday evenings from 6:30 to 8 p.m., and that one is every week. I should mention, too, that the Saturday BIPOC meeting that I co-facilitate, I don't know how your groups are, but I know that there is a need to have weekly groups. I've had people voice that they wish that our meetings were weekly. So, again, this is another reason why we need more facilitators, so that we can support the needs of everyone in the BIPOC communities.
This was a great session to get out to community. So we hope to have you join us or sign up to be a facilitator.
Thank you for listening to this episode featuring Tanisha McShann, Sion Bay, and Monica Jones, who was our episode host. We are so grateful to have such impassioned and empathic support group facilitators that are truly peers and equals in the spaces they get to host. NAMI Minnesota's Multicultural Young Adult Advisory Board provides general information and discussion about medicine, mental health, and related subjects. The words and other content provided in this podcast episode and in any referenced materials are not intended and should not be construed as medical advice. If the listener or any other person has a medical concern, they should consult with an appropriately licensed physician or mental health professional. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it, as research has proven that untreated mental illnesses often display more severe or debilitating symptoms. If you are in a mental health crisis, please call or text 988 or chat with a crisis counselor at 988lifeline.org.